Welcome back to Niaga Spotlight with me, Tamina Kausji. Now, this week on Future Affairs, we're looking at the impacts of the EV revolution in Malaysia. The automotive industry contributes 4% or roughly 40 billion ringgit to Malaysia's GDP, employing a workforce of over 700,000 individuals throughout a nationwide ecosystem. Meanwhile, the still nascent electronic vehicle or EV car market in Malaysia received a significant boost last week, with Tesla adding to the list of players formally operating here. Plus, the launch of the BYD EV Dolphin just yesterday, with prices beginning at an attractive 99,900 ringgit. Now, in light of increasing consumer choices for the EV market, today on Niaga Spotlight, we discuss wider issues and overcoming challenges to ensure a smoother transition to EV vehicles for the mass market right here in Malaysia. Aiman I. Abdullah, Managing Editor, of course, with Malaysian Motoring, the nation's fastest-growing automotive news and reviews channel, joins me now in the studios for this conversation. Aiman, welcome to studios. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much for having me.
Wonderful. Let's get started off by your thoughts on what are the foreseeable impacts of EV adoption on Malaysia's auto economy. We're also at a very interesting point whereby car sales have finally become positive again, as opposed to what was happening during the pandemic, where there was a huge slowdown. First half of 2023, in fact, it grew 10.3% year on year. So where are we right now, especially with these interesting investments from the EV players?
Well, I mean, in terms of the automotive market in general, we've seen that the projected TIV this year is about, total industry volume this year is about 725,000 units, which is actually higher than the original projection of about 700,000 vehicles, which will be our highest number of total vehicles sold in Malaysia ever.
Yeah.
So, but in terms of the EV impact on that TIV, it's still relatively small. I think in 2022, we only saw about 2,000 EVs sold, which is, of course, a massive increment over the year before and the years prior to that. But again, we can see that adoption rates still remain a little bit slow. However, that may change in the very near future because, as you mentioned, the BYD Dolphin, which was launched yesterday, which is now Malaysia's best value EV, is now available. I can see that from my audience, for example, there are a lot more people considering this who may not have looked at an EV prior, partly to do with that price point. But in terms of overall economic impact, I think right now it's just the adoption stage to see people transition to EVs, and then we will see potentially more significant investments towards manufacturing or assembly here for EVs going forward.
Absolutely. Now, speaking about investments for manufacturing, Geely, of course, is to invest 10 billion USD, close to 40 billion ringgit, to transform Tanjung Malim, of course, Perak, into the region's largest auto city. What do you see as being the most strategic advantages of Tanjung Malim, which has, of course, attracted this investment, and all of this is going to be happening with Proton shifting its entire ops there by about 2025-26?
Yes. So the thing about Tanjung Malim is that from the very beginning, from when Proton set up shop there, it was always envisioned to be an auto city. So it also has the facilities available for vendors and other part suppliers to set up shop there. Mm-hmm. And as a result, it means that it makes manufacturing a lot easier because all of your vendors, all your suppliers are sort of nearby. And then on top of that, Tanjung Malim uniquely benefits from having sort of rail connection, and it's not that far from the capital city, which means that it's just very easy to manage as opposed to other manufacturing facilities dotted around the country. As for Tanjung Malim and Proton and Geely in general, what we've seen from the Geely Group is that they are an enormous Chinese automaker. They have more than a dozen brands under them, and they have seen Proton as a strategic partner and Tanjung Malim as a potential hub for right-hand drive manufacturing for vehicles, not just under the Proton brand, but under their entire umbrella of brands that may export to the rest of ASEAN. So that would certainly be a huge benefit for the local economy.
Mm-hmm. And before we move along, would that also point towards perhaps a fully Malaysian-made EV in the near future, looking at the level of investment that's actually going into this Tanjung Malim AHTV?
I think if we talk about Malaysian EVs or a Malaysian-made EV, a lot of consumers look at that as something that would bear a national car badge.
Sure.
And when we look at the market share, Proton and Prodor collectively control just under 70% of the passenger car market. And they service customers that are a bit more price sensitive. They are looking for people who see a car as an essential item, not necessarily as a luxury.
Yes, A to and B, right?
Exactly. So because of that, these are people who prioritize things that are reliable, things that are familiar to them, mm-hmm. and may not necessarily be interested in moving towards a next generation vehicle or a new generation vehicle just yet. And so a Malaysian-made EV is certainly on the cards. We've heard enough strategy from Proton and Prodor with regards to this. But it's certainly not in the very near term. It is something that they have to explore and consider going forwards, and to see whether or not, when that becomes viable, that I've no doubt that they will move very quickly.
And additionally, I'm sure that a lot of insight will be gained from how perhaps the BYD Dolphin does in about 6 months' time. So we should revisit this then.
Precisely.
Right. Moving along, Ayman. Now, in March last year, the previous government then, they reiterated its aim for 10,000 EV charging stations by 2025. We're still far below, with about 1,000 odd stations here. What kind of investments are going to be able to make up the difference in time to also scale up to the number of EVs being sold, which, as you said, year on year, it is increasing? We may even reach, let's say, perhaps a million within the next 2-3 years per year.
I think that that will largely be down to government policy. So at the moment, car makers, especially those with significant local investments, like Burma's Auto Group and Siam Darby, for example, they are in a position now where they have to distribute these vehicles. They're just selling vehicles that they can import in order to better understand and service the customers that want EVs today. But as I mentioned earlier, this still represents a relatively small number of consumers. So it is very much a chicken and egg scenario. So we need to see more EVs, and then that will trigger more investment. But if we look at local stakeholders, players from, for example, Tenaga Nasional, like TNBX and GoToYou, as well as Petronas's Gentari, they are rolling out DC fast chargers and public chargers quite significantly in a decent enough rate. The much older player, which is Charge EV, they still maintain the largest network of chargers across the country, and they continue to roll out more destination chargers at shopping malls and places of interest and tourist attractions and stuff like that. And they will continue those investments moving forward, and no doubt with more EVs coming in and more people adopting an electric mobility or an electric lifestyle, they will key in a little bit more money towards expanding those facilities. But it has to be in tandem with the adoption of EVs. So they have to wait for consumers, and then the consumers will be able to find the chargers.
Fair enough. And speaking of the ecosystem itself, though, we're already seeing plenty of second-hand EVs on the market with under 1,000 kilometres of mileage. What do you feel that is pointing towards? Is it just part of the general automotive consumer cycle in Malaysia, or do you think it has to do with the wider challenges, such as just not being able to find enough convenient charging ports, Ayman?
I think a lot of the EVs that we see on the used market right now came in during pilot programs. For example, there was a ride-sharing business here called Comos, which had, I think, Renault Zoes and Renault Twizys and that, and a few Nissan Leafs.
I recall that, yes.
Yeah, but the thing is, the company itself didn't do very well. It didn't end up sort of capturing consumers very well. So these vehicles ended up not being used. In fact, a couple of my colleagues ended up buying used Renault Zoes off of Comos later when they defleeted them. And so the low mileage that you're seeing is not necessarily reflective of people not being interested in EVs or there being a challenge in terms of infrastructure, but it's just because these vehicles were underutilized and they maybe came to market a little bit too soon. In terms of other EVs that you see now, vehicles that were introduced, say, in the last couple of years or so, the mileages tend to be a little bit higher. But as I've no doubt your audience would probably agree, that EVs are still very much a secondary car. It's not necessarily a primary vehicle, and so the mileages tend to be a little bit lower. These are also not necessarily vehicles in a household where they only have one or two cars. So the utilization tends to be a bit lower. And because these come from households with higher disposable income, they may see these vehicles as toys. It's just an experience for them to try. And if they get bored, they move on to something else. So I don't think it's necessarily reflective of the infrastructure and the ecosystem as it stands today. I think it's more reflective of the consumers and how they view their cars. But I think, again, with the introduction of more mass market EVs that we're seeing now that are coming in at much lower, much more attractive price points, we may be able to see that trend change a little as people move and they see these EVs as, this is the car I use every day, or this is the only car I have, potentially.
Right. So moving into that conversation, Ayman, now when it comes to the point, perhaps in maybe 5 years, where more of us are using an EV as our everyday car, what about the other players within the ecosystem, specifically the workshops and especially the smaller workshops? Will they be able to scale up in time to be able to service the increasing EV market as opposed to, of course, the general ICV market?
Well, I think very recently there was an announcement by the Ministry of Transport requiring that independent workshops and independent mechanics have certifications on their walls. And I suspect that this was met with a lot of blowback, but I suspect that this is done sort of in anticipation of certification for being able to service electric vehicles. Now, if you're talking in the next sort of 3 to 5 years, we may not see mechanics be able to make that move just yet, because a lot of EVs available today come with 5-year warranties for the vehicle as an entirety, as well as 8-year warranties for the powertrain battery units. So there isn't an immediate requirement for that, because in that period, consumers will just be going back to authorized service centers. But no doubt, the players that do have a little bit more capital to invest may want to upskill their workers now, or may be looking at ways to upskill their workers now in preparation of that, because Malaysians are very prudent spenders. And so for us, it's the moment we can move away from an authorized workshop, an authorized mechanic, we will go and find an independent mechanic to try and save a little bit of money to keep our cars on the road. So because of that, if that is the case, then naturally the mechanics will follow suit. They will follow their consumers. But we'll have to see whether there will be programs available in Malaysia to do that, because I'm not sure if there are any available just yet. But I've no doubt that the colleges and so on that offer these courses will be looking towards offering those courses in the very near term. And independent mechanics will always have a place here because Malaysians demand them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do indeed. And now, Aiman, I'd like to spend a little bit of time speaking about the elephant in the room, which is, of course, currently the mining for the items which are part of the EV batteries. That, of course, needs to be decarbonized. Tell me a little bit more about what's happening in that ecosystem.
I think that a lot of the discussion with regards to mining and the CO2 emissions that come from mining, it's largely used as an argument against electric vehicles, because it's to say that, oh, these vehicles emit a lot more carbon in the beginning rather than throughout the course of their lifetime, as you would with internal combustion engine. And that is indeed true. But for an EV, for every kilometre travel, that is more carbon being reduced. It sort of neutralises, and you end up at a net zero or throughout the lifetime of a vehicle. But we also have to bear in mind that electric vehicles, as you said, it's still a nascent technology. At this point, it's maturing, but it's not quite matured yet. And if we look at the innovation that has taken place over the last 10 years with regards to electric mobility, we can see that the pace of that innovation has been quite rapid. Mm-hmm. And internal combustion engines, for example, have had a 100-year head start. So they've arrived at a point today where they are incredibly thermally efficient, they are easier and more efficient to manufacture, and are less harmful for the environment in terms of both usage as well as manufacturing.
But the ceiling has sort of been reached as far as ICBs go, right?
There are car makers that would disagree. Like Mazda, for example, and mm-hmm. Toyota enjoy in some of the most thermally efficient engines out there. They continue to invest in internal combustion because they believe in a multi-pathway strategy where electricness might not necessarily be the end-all solution for the near term. But there is still some room, but you are quite right that ceiling is quite close. Now, the point I'd like to go back to is that hopefully in the next 5 years or so, we'll see mining practices become more sustainable and more eco-friendly, more carbon aware, perhaps, in order to feed the continued move towards electric vehicles. Because it seems very clear that electric mobility is the future of personal transport, whether we like it or not. And so, naturally, the acquisition of necessary raw materials and parts and so on will have to also follow suit in terms of global requirements for lesser carbon emissions and so on.
Yes, absolutely. And now I'm going into, of course, the slightly hyped up but at the same time expected 12 stations announced by Tesla for charging. Do you think other brands such as BYD, etc., will also be investing this heavily in charging points and stations to make it a little bit more accessible? Or is it at this point in time just about offloading what might just be a little bit of a surplus from the China market?
I think it's worth bearing in mind that when we talk about Tesla, Tesla also benefits from manufacturing their own chargers. So the supercharger is something that they make in-house. It's their own technology, it's their own patents and so on. And so they can build these superchargers for a lot less than it costs a regular charger. One of the companies that I work with has explained that a DC fast charger at one of their showrooms, for example, can cost up to R1 million to install. A Tesla supercharger is significantly more affordable. And so as a result, it does mean that Tesla can roll out 12 chargers for a lot less cost than it would a company like BYD. Secondly, for Tesla, supercharging is not just a facility available to their customers, because Tesla in Malaysia has committed a 30% availability to non-Tesla customers. And so this creates a new revenue stream for them, in addition to them selling cars, particularly when the inevitable removal of CBU tax exemptions mm-hmm. for EVs comes into effect, because at that point their cars will no longer really be economical to sell. So for players like BYD, it's a bit different because they don't sell directly. BYD has appointed Sime Darby as their distributor in Malaysia, and Sime Darby works with partners like Charge EV, As well as GoToU for their DC fast chargers. So BYD may not necessarily go into charging themselves, and I don't think there is a plan for that just yet, at least not from my discussions with them. And so we may not see more branded chargers going forward. However, our local charge point operators, like I mentioned earlier, like Charge EV and Gantari and Jom Charge, these are players that are investing very heavily in the charging network, and they're doing their level best to try and make sure that there is enough infrastructure to feed demand. But again, as I mentioned at the beginning of this conversation, it has everything to do with adoption rates. The more EVs we see, the more chargers we'll see, and so on.
Yes, indeed. Definitely. Thank you so very much, Ayman. That was absolutely comprehensive, but at the same time, pretty concise about where we stand with regards to the EV revolution in Malaysia right now. Thank you for making time for us on Niaga Spotlight.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. Well, this has been Niaga Spotlight with me, Tamina Kausji. We'll see you again next Friday with more business analysis and insights. Here's to a productive week ahead.